Hi, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Marnie. Welcome to The Strength of Us. Our podcast speaks with everyday people whose real life stories can inspire, educate, and remind us that we're not alone.
The Strength of Us is an inclusive community. We are empowered by shared insight and knowledge, and together we are stronger. Together we build The Strength of Us. Hey everyone. When I was 3 years into my IVF journey, I was told about this incredibly gifted natural medicine practitioner, Robert Gentile. I'd heard of him because we both grew up in Shepparton, but he was a few years younger than me. Rob comes from a family of caring and personable people, and this includes his extended family. His mother, Rose, is a holistic healer and hypnotherapist, and his dad, Sam, is the softly spoken paramedic that I certainly would want to meet if I was in a stressful situation. No wonder why Rob turned out to be the beautiful human being that he is. Everyone that meets him is instantly drawn to his warmth, and he is incredibly humble, especially for a man who has achieved so much at such a young age. Rob graduated from Victoria University with a Bachelor of Chinese Medicine with the highest honours and completed his clinical internship in gynecology at Shanghai's famous Shuguang Hospital, as well as oncology, internal medicine, and acupuncture. Now, Dr. Rob is the recipient of the Victoria University's Dean Scholar Award for the Faculty of Health, Science, and Engineering, and the University Medal of Academic Excellence for Academic Achievements in Chinese Medicine. He was awarded the Sun Ten Award for Chinese Medicine in 2009 and the highly commended Natural Medicine Practitioner of the Year Award in 2019. Rob is the Clinical Director of Essendon Natural Health in Victoria and has a focus on working with people who are experiencing fertility, IVF, pregnancy, and women's health related concerns. He incorporates the latest scientific research into his treatments and combines these with traditional holistic approaches. He commonly works with gynecologists, obstetricians, and reproductive specialists, and firmly believes in the integration of medicine, combining the best of East and West. Today, Marnie and I will be speaking with Rob and one of his inspirational patients, Adriana Candello. We met Adriana in our last episode where she told us about her MS experience from diagnosis at 26 through to being a mum and ambassador for Kiss Goodbye to MS. Today we get to dig a bit deeper into how Miracle Man Rob, as she calls him, and the rest of her health team contributed to her success of becoming a mother of three healthy children. Here is our chat. Welcome, Robert Gentile and Adriana Candello.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us, guys.
So, Rob, my first question is to you. Did the 16-year-old Rob know that he was going to be working in women's health in the future?
No, like he didn't. I guess it all started, first of all, with the 16-year-old Rob being interested in science, suddenly interested in East Asian ways of thinking, was doing
my... How did you even discover East Asian ways of thinking? You were living in Shepparton and it wasn't a common thing.
I was in an Italian family.
Listen,
I hit puberty and all of a sudden I had this sudden fascination in East Asian ways of thinking. And my dad had a traditional karate school, as you know. So I started doing really traditional karate under my father, and I had access to his bookshelf on meditation and all this type of stuff. So I just got really into it really quickly and it was really strong for me. But I was also interested in science and biology and the human body. So I guess East Asian medicine was an amalgamation of both of those ideas. So it was just a natural order, I think, for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So women's health probably came about when I was in my final year as a student. And for some reason, all the cases I was seeing that were coming to me were women's health related. They were patients who were going through IVF, patients with period pain, patients experiencing irregular cycles.
Yeah.
And that's what I started treating. And then before I knew it, you know, there were some of my fellow students who were referring patients to me saying, oh, I'm finishing up on Saturdays and she can only come Saturdays. Can you see this one? She's for women's health. Mm. Are you really enjoying that?
Yeah.
And I think as any kind of clinician, no matter what modality of medicine you do, if you have this initial kind of experience in something and you get good results and it fills you with confidence, suddenly it perks your interest.
Yeah.
And when I went to Shanghai, and did my internship at Shanghai Shuguang Hospital, working in the gynecology department and seeing how well traditional medicine can be integrated with conventional care really made me want to pursue that further. And that's what I did. I came back to Essendon and I started working.
So you offer a holistic approach to women's health, especially in the field of fertility, but how does herbal medicines work?
Herbal medicine, I mean, they're crude drugs, essentially. We have to remember that most pharmaceutical drugs come from plants and that plants have active constitutions, active chemical compounds. And if you look at something like Chinese herbal medicine, it's completely, you know, based on dosing. You know, the stronger you go with the dose, the bigger the effect. You know, they're dose dependent, just like they are with drugs. It's just that they're in their natural form. And there is a whole system of, I guess, ideas about how to use them, when to use them. And that is very different to Western herbal medicine that's practiced in kind of modern naturopathy these days. And I do a bit of both. Yeah, that is fundamentally how they work.
Do you say that Western medicine is more of a reactive approach, like the emergency services and, you know, antibiotics and treating, whereas Western medicine more so might look at the cause of it and go deeper, such as looking at alternative therapies like acupuncture and cupping and things that you could maybe explain to us a bit more about. But is that more looking at the cause of it than just a reaction?
No, I mean, like, I believe, you know, conventional medicine does to a degree as well. Conventional medicine has a really strong point, and that is that it's fantastic at acute care. You know, if you have someone who breaks your, you know, if you break your arm, you know, you go to ED, you know, you go to hospital. If you have appendicitis, you go to ED, you know what I mean? You call triple zero, you know?
Yeah.
My father's a paramedic and a micro-paramedic, and, you know, it's something that, you know, I know well and truly the value of that. Where I guess sometimes conventional care needs a bit more help is with chronic long-term conditions, whereby, you know, improving the general state of health can really help to improve the quality of life and outcomes for a lot of those chronic conditions.
So that's so much better than taking a pill or, you know, I'm really starting to really support the idea that if it comes from the ground, and the less that's done to it, the better it is for our bodies.
I think any conventional physician would also agree that whatever works for you, do it.
Yeah.
Providing it's safe and providing it's not going to cost you an absolute arm and a leg to do, you know, then whatever works for you, do it. So if that means celery juice is helping people with joint aches, then I think even, you know, a rheumatologist is going to say, well, keep doing it. If you're finding that helpful, keep doing it because it's not going to cause you harm.
No.
In celery juice. Different story if you're doing something that could potentially cause you harm or is something that is really leading you up a garden path where it's going to cost you, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to do some sort of weird treatment. You know, then a different story. But I think, you know, most specialists and physicians, they're going to be like that and they'll be pretty supportive. On an individual basis.
Are you finding that there's now, you know, years 20, 20, 21, are we getting a better crossover of Eastern and Western understanding?
Yeah, I think very much so. And I think the best way to go about that, and I say this to students when they come in to the clinic to follow me here, or I say this to other practitioners, and that is right. For practitioners, we need to write to GPs and write to specialists and tell them that we are seeing their patient. This is what we're doing. We're not going to tell them to come off their medication or to do something that is against, you know, what they're doing. We are well trained. This is the plan that I'm doing with your patient. This is the blood tests I've run. Here are the results. Please let me know if you have any questions or concerns. I'm only an email away. And it just helps to create dialogue. And there's always been so much dialogue that has been missing between conventional and, I guess, complementary practitioners because there's this traditional idea, and it's wrong, and that is that medical doctors don't like natural medicine practitioners and natural medicine practitioners don't like medical doctors and they're going to disagree at everything. And it's not the case. I mean, as you guys know, I work with women's health and reproductive cases a lot. Yeah. And there are many reproductive specialists that I work with and we have very good dialogue. They know how I work. They know I'm not going to tell them to come off a medication that's, you know, or then I'm not going to give them something that's going to interact with the medications that they're prescribing. They know how I work. I know how they work. We communicate. And that just needs to be encouraged. The more kind of clinicians out there that are doing that and reaching out to GPs and specialists, letting them know that we are seeing your patient, we are sensible, this is what we're recommending, we're here to work with you, I think it's really positive.
And it's that approach of treating the whole person.
Yep.
Yeah, so I'm a big believer in integrative medicine, this idea of combining, you know, conventional and natural together in a safe and hopefully efficacious way.
Yeah.
And that's what worked for me all these years as well, working with both and knowing that I don't choose one over the other. I do it collective, and it's worked for me, and I've kept all my options open and not either, you know, my neurologists and my specialists or Rob have ever said, don't do this, don't listen to that, but they've always worked together and we've combined my treatments, and it's something that I think's helped me over the years.
Absolutely. Well,
you know, MS is a serious condition and it needs to be approached primarily in a medical manner.
Yeah.
And the complementary medicines you do alongside there are an adjunct therapy. They support that conventional approach. You're never saying, going to say to someone, don't do this or don't do that. You know, it's they need to do the conventional approach, and we're here to support that and to get that further, a little bit of that further 10% or 20%. Or to improve that quality of life further, and it can make a big difference to individuals' lives.
Well, Rob, when you started working with Adriana, is treating MS very different to how you treat any other issues?
Well, I guess, you know, from a perspective, I would say that I wouldn't claim ever to treat MS. I think I'll claim I'm here to just treat her body and to treat her nervous system, to treat what comes up. So in simple terms, no, it's always the same. You're always treating the body, right?
Yeah.
And if that is MS, or if that's a person that has Parkinson's, or if that's a person that has a chronic gastrointestinal disorder, you go through your diagnostics and you see what the body has to tell you, read it, and then you treat that, and then the person improves. So that's, you know, I guess natural medicine at, you know, a fundamental level.
Yeah. So I know that you offer cupping and moxibustion and so on. So, Adriana, what sort of things was Rob doing to you during that time?
Well, I've been seeing Rob for a better part of, I think, 13, 14 years now. So well before I was diagnosed with MS. I think it was in my initial stages of having MS, but I wasn't diagnosed. I was seeing him for what I thought was nerve issues in my lower back, and I think I was getting a moxibustion with the little heat thing on the end of the needle. But over the years, I've had a lot of needles, I've had a lot of cupping, does like massage therapy sort of things with me as well. And it's like a range of issues that I've had, or health issues or health concerns. He's helped improve those and helped me get through all that alongside my clinical practitioners as well. So we've been through a lot together, Rob. And not to say, but I think he's like part-time my psychologist because, he gets all the tears and the tantrums. So,
absolutely. Someone you can be real with.
It sounds like your practice as well, Rob, is that you do offer the holistic therapies. Adriana, when you came to Rob to seek help for IVF treatment to fall pregnant, because obviously, like, the first thing you said when you were diagnosed with MS is that you wanted to have children. So can you talk us through kind of some of the complications that women with MS might face when they want to fall pregnant? And
so in my case, falling pregnant and having MS was more so the fact that not a lot of studies have been done. Well, they can't really do clinical studies with medications and pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So I had to come off my medication fair few months before we actually wanted to start trying. So in that time, I just felt unprotected from what was helping me all that time. In the sense of MS, they don't know if MS impacts fertility. I know a lot of studies are being they're looking into stuff like that. But for me, it was more so the fact that not being on a medication, or if I was to have relapsed during pregnancy, what would my options have been? I was seeing Rob to help me with symptoms of MS. So as I progressed into the whole pregnancy phase and things like that, we used to combine my treatments and we'd work towards that, like helping like hormone balancing and things like that, and getting my health into a better order to help progress into the next phase of becoming pregnant.
Rob, in one of our previous episodes, I've explained to our listening community the journey I had that resulted in not having children. However, I am forever grateful to you for leading me towards the answers of why my body wasn't doing what it needed to do. And when we first met, I had already been through 6 out of 9 of my embryos. And when I met you, you said, well, can you ask your doctor for this test, this test, this test? And when I went to him, he called it hocus pocus. So then that was then the next phase of finding a different IVF doctor and so on. Can you please explain to our listeners some of the important questions, questions that you think are important, and this is to you too, Adriana,
yeah,
questions that you think are important to ask your IVF doctor if you are not getting pregnant? If they're just, because a lot of people have this perception that IVF doctors, they're just there for the money. And my original doctor, he had quite a series of beautiful sports cars and was not willing to do any further tests. He was just doing the same thing over and over and over. So what do you guys suggest to people out there going through IVF and not getting results?
The first thing is that there's two types of IVF doctors. There's the type of IVF doctor who is more conservative and strongly evidence-based, and they want absolute evidence to be very clear before they implement a therapy, a test or a strategy. And then there are the more experimental IVF doctors who will start to use emerging therapies that have some evidence for them, but isn't completely evidence-based. So it's not completely a part of the protocols used in, you know, Victoria. But there is evidence for them, and they start to use them early and start to test for all those other possibilities of why happy, healthy embryos that maybe have been PGS tested, so they're genetically, they're chromosomally normal, why they're going in and they're still not working, why aren't they implanting? And I guess what I said to you was a whole bunch of tests that start to move into that experimental frontier.
Yeah.
And I'm completely aware that there's going to be IVF doctors who just simply do not want to go down that field. That's just not for them. There are plenty of other IVF doctors who are into that though.
Yeah.
And being, I guess, whether they consider that to be hocus pocus or not, generally not. Most doctors won't, you know, and you do see those strategies are shifting. And now they start to offer more and more of the investigative tests, because I think many patients were kind of sometimes going elsewhere. But I think that, you know, it's just a matter of understanding, yeah, what questions to ask and which specialists to go to when some of those standard approaches maybe aren't working. There's a number of tests, and it's going to depend on, I guess, how your IVF specialist views it and whether they kind of consider that to be something that they do find clinically useful, and some will find that they don't find it clinically useful. But they could be natural killer cell biopsies, so doing an endometrial biopsy at a certain time in the cycle, and sending that biopsy off for testing to see the number of natural killer cells in the line to see if the body is having a potential immune response against an embryo.
Yeah.
There is some evidence for this. However, the evidence is still lacking to make it a concrete part of IVF today.
Yeah.
But there are many doctors who will practice this. Then there's some more controversial topics, like, you know, DQ alpha gene testing.
These are the things that I got done.
Is that the one we sent to Spain?
No, that would be an ERA kind of biopsy.
Yeah,
and that's where you're doing a mock cycle, and you're taking a biopsy of the lining, and you're sending that lining off at the time where you'd usually put the embryo in to see if that lining is pre-receptive or post-receptive. So do you need to do that transfer maybe half a day later or half a day earlier?
Wow.
Because the lining is not quite in sync with the embryo. Yeah. And almost every IVF clinic is starting to really do that. I remember when that first came out, not many doctors were doing it. I think I saw Nick Lologist at Monash IVF being one of the first to start to do that. But I see every major clinic now doing that test, which is really good to see.
Yeah.
It is expensive. It's not covered by Medicare. So, you know, it's something that your doctor really has to feel that you're at that stage. Yeah. And a lot of patients will say to me, why didn't my doctor suggest this earlier? And it's because, well, hey, these are interventions and they're costly sometimes.
Yeah.
And
they're
not going to suggest that straight up. They're going to want to see that there's reason to do that before they do it.
Yeah.
And I always want patients to know that, you know, don't blame your doctor for that. They're doing the best they can, but it gets to a point where you think, all right,
you weren't doing anything different. It's like, why keep going down the same path?
Yeah, well, and that's what I'm all about. Yeah. And there's a number of doctors here in Melbourne, you know, that I do work with that are all about that. They're about, you know, if that standard approach isn't working, okay, what do we need to do now to start to tick off the boxes that of potential variables that are working against you?
Yeah.
What can we start to do? What are those potential factors and how can we tick those boxes off? And I'm all about that.
I remember you talking about ticking all the boxes and making sure we understood everything. What was that test that you did, Adriana, I interrupted?
So I did the DQ gene testing or whatnot, and it so happened that me and Mark shared one gene the same, and so my body wasn't creating the antibodies to protect the baby. It was killing off my embryos. Well, I think that's how it goes anyway. You know, when you see your IVF specialist, they want to make you a baby, but at what cost sometimes? And it's not just the financial side of it, it's the emotional side. And for me, on the side that I was falling pregnant and I kept losing it, they're kind of, when I would start asking questions like, can we do what else? And they're like, but you're still young. Don't worry. You don't need to worry. You have a baby. But I'm like, I've already been through three miscarriages. I'm like, the thought of having another one, I know that I am young and I can keep going, but physically and emotionally and mentally, I can't. Like, it was too much. So, you know, I was able to see a different doctor and ask those questions that Rob has suggested. And it was so that I did end up having the natural killer cells test in the beginning.
Yeah.
And if I didn't fall pregnant with the twins, I was going to see this other doctor that Rob recommended, but I did finally become pregnant with the twins. But after my last miscarriage, after the twins, I went directly to that doctor instead of wasting time going through the motions with IVF and everything again, when it didn't look like I ever needed to have IVF. I could have just had these tests done and resolved those issues or been on those medications for those issues and still had natural pregnancies while being on these. So, yeah, it can be a long road for a lot of people. And I know a lot of people who stay with the same doctor and have failed attempt after failed attempt, but they don't do anything different. And so this is what, you know, I mean about, you've got choices, and if you've got that information, use it. You can go to somebody else to ask these questions if this other person doesn't think it's something that you need to do.
Yeah, and which is very different to finding a doctor until they tell you what you want to hear. It's very
new.
I just the one thing I'm really grateful for is now I know from those tests, one, that I have an autoimmune disease and that I have an underactive thyroid. So now I have to take a tablet every single morning for the rest of my life. How does an underactive thyroid impact pregnancy? I don't understand.
Well, I mean, thyroid is a really important hormonal gland, endocrine gland. And one of the main issues is that there's this hormonal axis, this communication between your hormones, between the glands in the brain, the hypothalamus, pituitary glands, and the ovaries. And, you know, the messaging between those is the thyroid. So if, for instance, once you fall pregnant, let's just say, and your ovaries start to recognize that you're pregnant, so the HCG levels go up, your ovaries start to continue to produce progesterone and more of it to try to hold the pregnancy. You know, a lot of this messaging, you know, goes through via the thyroid. So if the thyroid is lagging behind, now all of a sudden it has a lot of pressure on it to work and to work hard. And this is then when you start to see thyroid insufficiency. And where there's thyroid insufficiency, well, that can then lead to miscarriage or sometimes infertility as well. So assessing the thyroid correctly and correcting it, regardless of how you do that, it needs to be done. And the thyroid needs to be in optimal levels, an optimal range, in order for optimal fertility and also to reduce miscarriage risk. And, you know, any kind of, you know, medical physician who works in the reproductive field will tell you that. How they might assess the thyroid Well, that differs. It depends on the depth of diagnostics they choose to go down. So,
yeah. And another thing that I had to do, and I'm sure you would have had to do, Adriana, is I, because of, you know, my different issues and tummy issues and lactose intolerant and blah, 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 I had to be very strict on my diet. So I ended up being gluten-free and dairy-free just to make sure there wasn't that extra upset. Did you have to change anything as well?
I didn't have to, but at the end, like, me and Rob had always discussed that it could be an option. I'm very funny with my food, so I'm not making up gluten was like very difficult. But after all the miscarriages that I'd had and all the tests and all the IVF and all the drugs and everything that I was on, I'm like, what have I got to lose? So it's something that we did prior to becoming pregnant with the twins. I think it was 3 months. I did dairy-free, gluten-free, I think for a couple of months before I fell pregnant with the twins, and I did it up to as far as I could. I think I nearly got to 12 weeks with the twins before I was like, I just want to, I cried to my dad. I'm like, just make me a tomato and cheese sandwich on white bread. So I felt so sick, and that's where it ended. But
yeah,
I think it helps with inflammation. Yeah.
I will add something to that, and that is that there actually isn't, you know, any evidence to suggest that for non-celiacs, gluten will affect fertility or miscarriage in celiacs or people who are undiagnosed celiacs. And there's a lot of people that have silent celiac disease where they have no outward symptoms, but actually do have active celiac disease. You know, those who are eating gluten may then have increased risk of miscarriage and infertility. Yeah. So there is that. Some people, you know, will come up positive for celiac genes but aren't expressing celiac disease yet. And, you know, I do know of, you know, at least one hematologist that does recommend to his patients to trial gluten-free to see if that actually helps. And I think I lean towards that. You know, I'm never ever saying to my patients, hey, you know, this is evidence-based and it's going to make a difference, but more so that, hey, it's not going to cost you much to do. It's not going to hurt you to do it or trial it. If we do it safely and we make sure that we're replacing obviously our sources of calcium, if we go down the dairy-free route as well. But I make sure people really understand that, you know, this is more so a trial to do, in that if you are potentially having reactions to fructans because you have some fructose malabsorption, you know, that may increase kind of inflammation and irritation in the gut. It may affect the microbiome, which is the bacteria in the lining of the gut, which can ultimately affect the microbiome and the bacteria in the lining of the uterus. Which now is becoming much more common to test for, known as an Emma Alice test. And Lisa, I think you had an Emma Alice test when you got your ERA done. And that actually tests the bacteria in the lining. So we're starting to get to a point in IVF where we're starting to really make an understanding and have a value on those microbiome bacteria, you know, the lactobacillus and bifidobacterium strains, you know, in the lining. And also that strains like E. coli and other, you know, strains like that, when they're in higher amounts, can cause more inflammation and less desirable, possibly less desirable environment for implantation of an embryo. So it's becoming more and more common.
Yeah. When I asked Adriana if she would like to be on this episode with you, I said, you know, do you think Rob has directly impacted or he's the reason you are pregnant? She wrote back and literally said, I 100% believe that, you know, I have three beautiful children because of Rob. Adriana, what made you say that?
It was just, it's true. I don't think that if I wasn't seeing Rob, I don't know how long that would have gone on for, how many miscarriages, how many. I don't think I would have had the right information to ask. And you, when you see, you know, a fertility specialist, you just assume that they can help you and then you trust them. So you just keep doing the same things. You know, not many people, you know, some people just think, oh, it might take this many years to get pregnant, or it might take this, even though you don't like it. That's what the expectation, the reality of it is that it happens for a lot of people who keep doing the same things and nothing happened. So I don't know if that's what would have happened to me. I probably would have if I didn't have that guidance from Rob to point me in the right direction and to help me do these other things to help my health and get the right information from the people and you know, ask those questions and pretty much demand these tests being done or else I'll seek another opinion. It wasn't just the side of getting pregnant, but Rob, you know, helped with helping me have a good pregnancy and with hormone levels and things like that. So it was a really hard time for me being pregnant, not just having twins, but having MS and having a lot going on. So I feel like I had that care as well. So I was taken care by, you know, a range of people, and it's like a care that we all should have that not everyone would think to have. And I honestly believe it helped my whole pregnancy experience to be as successful as it was. We did hit a few bumps in the road, but you can't change the way my genetics and my DNA are, but you can have these people in your life that can, they know more than you, and they can give you that information and help you get there. So yeah, I feel very well taken care of. And yeah, like I said, he's my doctor, Rob, for everything. Whenever I have any issue, I'm like, Rob, what should I do? And he, you know, he's like, I think you should see this person, or you need to do this or whatnot. So he's my first go-to because I just trust his advice and his specialty. And and I've even sent friends to him who've been at the very end of their pregnancy journeys, like they've been told I'll never be able to have kids again. And I'm like, please just go and see Rob, and he will be able to give you the information that I think that you're missing and direct you to people that can help you. So along with helping you with the issues that you're having. So I call him the miracle man, and he knows that. And yeah, no, I'm very blessed and very fortunate that I've had Rob as part of my healthcare team and my friend for all these years, and will continue to have for many, many years to come. So yeah.
That is great. You know, the other thing I'm wondering, you know, you were talking to us in the last episode about the psychological impact and the depression and all that sort of stuff. And I just wonder, when you have a better understanding, especially scientifically or fact-wise, can that then lower that anxiety and all that emotional wonder? Can it kind of help balance it out by saying, well, actually, if I think about this in a scientific way, I can take the emotion out of it? Is that what happens?
I feel like it was more a sense that being informed gave me choices and more options. Like in the beginning, especially when you have a miscarriage that's unknown, it's everyone says, well, it's normal. As a person who's had a miscarriage, it doesn't feel normal, and it doesn't matter that it's supposed to be a normal thing. It's still very traumatic. To experience it more than once, and then people say, yeah, but it's okay. We don't really need to test to see what's wrong with it, because, you know, it's quite normal to have three miscarriages. You know, I didn't think that I would want 10 miscarriages before someone was concerned about what was going on. So from the advice of Rob and having that information to ask these questions and then getting answers and getting, you know, these other alternative things that I could be doing, that gave me hope. And having hope you need when you're going through the pregnancy journey, because without it, it's pressure on yourself, it's pressure on your partner, it's life altering, it creates so many issues financially, emotionally, physically, that you can only do it to a certain point before, you know what, you'll end up having a baby, but you've lost your relationship, or financially you've lost your house because of whatnot. So as much as you'd like to trust certain, you know, specialists, sometimes I feel like you need to be knowledgeable about other things that can potentially help. And that gave me hope. That helped with the depression and whatnot, because I was in a really dark place. And I think a lot of that was stuff that stemmed from my MS. And then I was going through the fertility side of it, not being able to get pregnant. I went through a really, really dark time. And you know, pregnancy and depression, when you need to be in a good state of mind as well. And the stress is the biggest issue for everything.
Yeah.
So I guess knowing that I had someone who I could trust to help guide me, and, you know, seeing these other people give me that hope, that made it less of a stressful thing, because I had new things to be able to do to say, right, well, let's try this because we think this is going to work. So that was, you know, a really helpful thing and kept me going.
Wow. Yeah. It sounds like it's, I have a question for you, Rob, as well, that Adrienne, just off the back of You were saying that it was a holistic approach to, you know, your MS before that, and then the fertility treatments as well, and anxiety and depression. So, Rob, when you have somebody, a patient that will come in to you and looks for advice and guidance on helping with fertility issues, helping with muscular, helping with anxiety and depression, like, do you find that you can help in a holistic way, but that some people may not even notice they're suffering from such stress that you're able to identify that because it's a holistic approach with herbal medicines and cupping and alternative therapies and your psychiatrist abilities as well.
natural abilities.
Natural psychology.
I mean, I think what I'd always say to people is that, you know, especially when they've got complex issues, is that the best approach is always to have a good team. And that means to have, you know, a good, if it's more of a mental health thing, then to have a good psychologist that you trust. If you're under the care of a psychiatrist, that you've got a good psychiatrist that you trust.
Yeah.
And that, you know, if you then want to start to use acupuncture as a complementary therapy, that you see an acupuncturist who's experienced in that area of specialty that, you know, that you're seeking. And I think that having a team is really important. I do think you mentioned something at the end there of that question. And I do think that stress is very much an underrated etiological factor for many patients. You know, you see so many patients where, you know, maybe stress may not be the complete cause, but it's certainly a trigger for something. Skin conditions to, you know, for many things, you can just see that, you know, stress makes things worse. We all know that, you know, especially, you know, functional digestive issues. You know, we all know that, you know, digestion can get so upset by stress. So I think having the right team there is important, because you'll get so much from your medical staff. You'll get a little bit more from the psychologist. You'll get a little bit more from the complementary therapist. And it's about just making sure that you're, I guess, attacking your concerns from as, you know, many different angles as you can.
Yeah.
Get the most comprehensive, I guess, outcome.
One of our questions was what you think, both Rob and Adriana, your greatest lesson would be from this experience. But I think you've addressed that, Adriana and Rob, by looking at it holistically.
Yeah.
Would I be right to say that, or would you have anything more to add about what you think, you know, listeners could take away as their greatest outtake or lesson?
I would say don't be scared to seek opinions. You know, if you're seeing a specialist for something and you just feel like you've hit a bit of a brick wall, you've hit a bit of a plateau, don't be scared to seek a second opinion from another specialist, or to, you know, seek the advice from another healthcare professional, providing it sensible advice, because, you know, the one approach you're using, maybe it's done only so much for you. Now you need to kind of add that next level of care, or that next, you need to add that next set of eyes to your case who might see something that the other healthcare professional missed. And I think as healthcare professionals, you know, we all expect our patients to do that. I'm not afraid of my patients saying to me that they need to seek a second opinion or they want to seek a second opinion. You know, I encourage it, because I think that the more eyes on a case, you know, can help you to just find something that's been missed. And I'm often the one doing that for a lot of my patients. But, you know, within our clinic itself, sometimes I'll send some of my patients to see some of my colleagues, because I want them to have a look to see if I've missed something. We all come from a different experience base, and there's things that I can bring to the party. Yeah. But, you know, don't see me for psoriasis, because I'm not good at that. Yeah. You know, like, don't see me for eczema, because that's not my field. You know, we have... I have a colleague here that is really good at that stuff and really experienced with that. And I think, you know, you know, opinions where they need it, I think, is important.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit more about what people can expect when they come to see you in Essendon, walking in the front door. It's a beautiful environment that you've got there. It is so peaceful. I love sitting down and having a little drink and, you know, just relaxing before I come and see you. But we haven't really talked about some of the other things that you offer in the clinic.
Yeah, so it's a multi-modality practice, allied healthcare practice. So we have obviously acupuncture, and there's two other acupuncturists who work with me. There is, we've got 2 to 3 osteos, depending on who's on maternity leave at any given time. We've got 2 naturopaths. We've got two of which are trained in, you know, as nutritionists as well. We have massage therapy. We've got a myotherapist. And we also have someone who does, my mother, in fact, who does more like healing work and hypnotherapy. So, yeah, wow. So it's quite a mixed group.
So you don't need to be a woman or have or want to have children to walk into your
career? No, most certainly not. I mean, we have obviously, mm-hmm. you know, there's different practitioners for different things here. Yeah. I myself, you know, only really see more kind of women's reproductive side of things these days. That's probably makes up about 90%+ of my patient load. Yeah. That's where my experience base is in. Like I said, if it's for kind of some sort of, you know, psoriasis, then I would usually say see Natalie. She's a naturopath who, you know, has a special focus on, you know, natural dermatology and digestive yeah. issues. So that's what we sent to her for. So yeah, we do work as a bit of a team. And I think working in the team is important because we're not all good at everything. You know what yes. I mean? Like yeah. we're good at yeah. certain things, and you see the person who's the best fit for yeah. the complaint and best fit for the job.
Yeah, it's the same as being a teacher. I'm not as good at maths as I am at you know, teaching reading and writing. I'm like, go and ask another teacher about that one. I'm like, yeah, so, completely.
I'll still see Rob for everything though. I've got psoriasis, help me out.
Listen, I guess I've got old patients who I've been seeing for, you know, 10 years on and off over the last, you know, 10 years plus over the last decade, and, you know, I'll see them for different things still to this day yeah. because they are an old patient. I've got this relationship. I've seen them for years and yeah. I'll still see them for these old things. And they'll come to me and they'll say, you know, that they're going through something, you know, that's something I certainly wouldn't usually see as a new patient, yeah. but yeah. I'll totally see them for that because I've always seen them for everything. And, you know, I've known one of those patients. Yeah. So. Yeah.
It's weird. Who is this person? I'm not going, I feel like I cheated on Rob. No way.
But is it as much about just understanding your patient and knowing them so well that you can go back so far with someone that you continue to see them? Because
yeah, I mean, totally. You get to understand the way a patient's body works. You get to understand their personality and yeah. you know, personality and how that, I guess, can affect their body and
yeah. and their biological makeup into
yeah,
some
their
degree.
Biological makeup, the nature of the way their body works, where their body does not work, you know, as well as it should be, you know, that yep. they've got some digestive weaknesses or they've got, you know, a history of strong stress or anxiety disorders. And you kind of start to get this understanding over time. So, you know, when they come and see you, you know, where to look, where to start to focus on straight away, because you have that history with them. And that's absolutely. A really beautiful thing. And I think all healthcare professionals of all different modalities are like that with their patients. They do form a relationship and they do learn about their patients over the years. And
yep.
they're then able to kind of work with them on, I think, a few different levels. So
yeah, and as we age, things just go south. So
as we age, they do, you know, it's, yeah. That's just how it is. You know, we don't heal as well as we used to. We don't recover as well as we used to.
Exactly.
And we all probably need to be a bit more gentle on ourselves and a bit more careful with ourselves as we get older.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, you. Guys. It's been wonderful talking to you.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
See you all.
Thank you so much, Rob. For everything.
My pleasure.
If you would like to learn more about today's episode or to reach out and talk to someone, there are educational and helpful links in our show notes and on our Facebook and Instagram pages.
Join our community by subscribing and get in touch via our website, thestrengthofus.com. Thank you for listening, and remember that by staying connected, sharing stories, and living intentionally is how we build the strength of us.